several of the university professors. During the summer, he might cut grass, or usually my brother and I cut the grass. We cut grass. He was also the head waiter at the Chapel Hill Country Club. The Chapel Hill Country Club was primarily, and this was the old country club, I don't know whether, it probably doesn't exist anymore.
It's still there, but it's not the country club.
Okay, but this was near, well, on just off Raleigh Road, 54, and according to a golf course, country club, weekends, they would have dinner dances, and he was the head waiter for that. He'd hire the other waiters, the cooks, and so on, manage the club, and go out on Sunday morning and clean it. I'd go out and help him do that. He also gave away free water at football games, because he'd go there with a bucket, ice water, cups, and when people said, how much, say, no charge, let your the water's free, let your conscience be your guide. And people would usually give him a tip, because many of them were more concerned about getting ice and cups than they were about water, because they had their own liquid to put in there. But that was, those were some of the things that he did, all of which were connected either directly or indirectly with university. And as I said, we helped him with some of those things, so we were in the university community because of that. I need to, I do have to watch the clock, but I do want to mention a couple of other people, unless there's a question. I won't just keep going unless there's a question.
I have a question about your school experience. At some point, I want to ask.
Lincoln, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Okay. At Lincoln, the atmosphere was one of extended family, in the sense that the teachers lived in the community. I know we've mentioned this with Bob Gilgore, and I mentioned with Nardone, I'm sure that Ed also mentioned it. But as you know, I was living on Church Street. Within half a block from me, two or three of the teachers lived with a family which had a fairly large house. And other teachers lived throughout the community. The teachers were members of our churches. They came to our churches. So that the relationship with our parents was one which, shall we say, greatly enhanced the flow of information. So if anything was going on in school that the teachers felt our parents needed to know about, or if anything was going on at home that our parents thought the teachers needed to know about, that information went back and forth pretty quickly. And of course, this, I think, extended beyond the school into the community. I mean, this is a point that's been brought up in previously, so I don't think I want to dwell on it. But the other point about the experience in school was, first of all, the teachers did take a very genuine, I believe, interest in us as individuals. And the teachers tried to help us to develop whatever, let us say, talents that we had. And the teachers also tried to steer us away from those that the teachers felt were not necessarily the ones we wanted to cultivate for the rest of our lives. So it's a matter of watching for reinforcing the positive and trying to, well, of course, de-emphasize the negatives. And the teachers also took it upon themselves to steer us toward college, toward further studies. They did not make that, they did not put it in the context of either you go to college or you're going to be nothing. It wasn't that. But it was, if you feel that you have, if the teacher felt and the student felt that they had the potential, they were willing to go, then they wanted us to go. And many of them went so far as to take us on tours to colleges. I went to several with one of our football coaches, took a group of us. We left Chapel Hill one night in his car. We went to Hampton. We went to Virginia Union in Richmond on a weekend trip. So we could see what a campus looked like. Of course, North Carolina Central was right across in Durham. We played games at Hillside in Durham. Once or twice we played games on the campus of North Carolina Central, so that our teachers made it a point to, first of all, emphasize the possibility of continuing our education and, of course, of introducing us to possibilities for actually doing it by letting us know about college opportunities. A&T and Greensboro, similar. So I mentioned again to Ms. Nardone how small our school was, how small the student body was, so that we had, one might say, multiple opportunities to interact with teachers, not only in the classroom, but in the extracurricular activities. The extracurricular activities, the drama club, the newspaper, all of the others, because, of course, the teachers were advisors to those groups. And the school was so small, we had to belong to several groups in order for each group to have enough people to carry on its activities. So if we were in the band, or if we were in the choir, we were in the drama club, we were in the newspaper, I mean, that kind of thing were dominated. And we came out of school with, I think, those positive attitudes. I don't want to give you the impression, obviously, that life under, even in our enclave African-American group, that it was idyllic. Of course, it wasn't. There were problems. I think that they were not problems which defined our community. They were problems which we recognized, whatever, if alcoholism, et cetera, criminal activities, maybe some violence, never anything I think that it was at an extremely high level. But the adults, I think, made a sincere effort to try to shelter or shield children from that kind of thing until they felt that the children were mature enough to be able to perceive what those differences were and what effect they could have on our society. So I don't think that was defining. I think one other thing that I wanted to mention was what I feel was the defining moment from the historical perspective in the changes that occurred in Chapel Hill, and actually the changes which occurred throughout the nation. And I may be going off on the deep end by bringing this up, but World War II provided the major entry point into the money economy for women as well as for African Americans. And this was throughout the United States, because what happened when most of the, excuse the expression, able-bodied men were put into uniform, somebody had to carry on back here. And women and African Americans had the opportunity then to move into salaried positions. And I think especially for African Americans, that took many of us, again, excuse the expression, out of the fields, off the farms, to work in factories. There was a munitions factory in Carver, large munitions factory in Carver. Again, on the personal side, I became a newspaper delivery boy. My brother and I, we were delivering the Greensboro Record. And the reason we were given that opportunity to move into what had been a male, white male dominated profession, if you could call it that, even though there were some girls who were doing it, some white girls. I think one of them, I don't want to put too much of a burden on my memory. I'm not going to try to recall the name. But I know that one of the boys who was doing it was from the Athos family. And Chapel Hillians probably would recognize that Athos family, the daughter, one of the daughters in the Athos family became a fairly well-known writer.
Daphne.
Yes, right. But I think it was her brother, one of her younger brothers, who was also delivered. But anyway, we were recruited to deliver that newspaper because the Greensboro Record couldn't find white boys to do it. The white boys were this Durham Morning Herald, the Raleigh paper. So the Greensboro, guy from Greensboro came to us and said, want to know if we would deliver the paper. And we began delivering newspapers. My brother and I, we did that for several years. We also worked in one of the grocery stores downtown. I think it was still A&P. And a couple of fellows from our school, older, worked as, again, excuse the expression, get into semantics here, but they worked as soda jerks. If you've ever heard that, they worked on the counter serving sodas and sandwiches in one of the white drugstores downtown. There were two of them, but the rest of us, the other African Americans, could not go into that drugstore and order a soda or a sandwich and sit there and eat it. But they hired those two young, they were still in high school, so they hired those two young fellows. And this was because of World War II.
What about African American soldiers coming back from war? Was that, did you have people coming back who came home and were more unwilling to accommodate to things as they were than they had been before they went away to fight?
Absolutely, definitely. And of course, it was one major incident, I think South Carolina, where an African-American soldier who came back, I think he'd come back from Europe, and I think he wanted to get on a bus. I don't have with me documentation, so I don't want to get too many details, but I think at least he was blinded. I think they put out both his eyes. I'm not sure whether it was worse than that, but I know. And this was in South Carolina. So, yes, things like that.
You didn't notice that particularly in Chapel Hill? You weren't aware?
No, I was not aware of it in Chapel Hill.
One of the things that, once we became educated, we went off to school, we received an education. There was nothing here to do. I worked at the hospital. It opened up, but they weren't hiring African Americans with degrees. So we went away.
Yeah.
Okay. We were either going to work at the Carolina Inn as a waiter, or we were going to utilize our education. So you look and see a number of African Americans that had to leave, you know, to go somewhere and work. So a lot of that happened. It was just a migration norm.
That actually kind of leads to a question that I was wondering for either of you about. It's kind of a vague question, but it kind of getting at this issue. I was wondering, you were talking about during segregation, you spoke of sort of an integrated existence between sort of this complicated relationship between the university and the African-American community and loyalty and sort of bonds being created. And I was wondering if you felt like that changed with desegregation, and was that sort of responsibility for the university
he
felt
for
African American? That's true. I'm sort of feeling like that you're saying that, you know, there wasn't an opportunity for African Americans that were educated in Chapel Hill, so that responsibility didn't go, you know, only went to a certain.
Let me just, okay, I finished Hampton in chemistry, and there was nobody going to hire me to work in the laboratory here, not at the time. His mother, you know, people started working at the hospital, but that was in the 60s, So I went north, went to New York. I worked for Columbia University. I became supervisor of the biochemical lab. I did that because I worked harder than anybody else, and I learned things, and I didn't let them know what I was learning. So I became very, it depended on me. They began to see where I had to save them money. So I worked there for about 5 years. I came home every summer. If you're black, you stay in the cities, then you spend your vacations at home. That's what your parents expected, you know. And while I was here, my father was working on me because I had grandchildren. When you're coming home. So a job opened up at Memorial Hospital for someone to take over the chemical lab. And I had very good credentials. The problems that they had, you know, I knew quality control because I worked it at Columbia. And they fella offered me the job. And when I came, well, if you're African-American, you just don't apply for one job and you get it. I applied for two. Research Triangle Park had opened up. So I had a job there and I had a job at the university. I preferred to work at the university because I really felt like I was going to be the first black to attend the university. I don't know why I felt that way. I think it was my relationship with the DKE house. That, but I thought that I would be the first one to attend. I always wanted to work for the university, so I accepted the job at the hospital. And when I came, and they found out who I was, that I was black, even though my credentials were good, the fellow came and said, I really apologize to you, but your application is being held up, and I will never be able to get it, the log jam off someone's desk. First thing, I was black, salary was too high. You know. So I went to work for Kim Strand in the Research Triangle Park. So after that, people, you know, there were blacks that began to work in the labs, and once they got in there and saw the quality of work that they were doing, they became head of the department. That was Sandra Renwick that took over one of the labs, and his mother was very dependent upon, and they began to see that we did have talents and we were good. So things began to open up, even at the university. So we have an expression that when blacks finish school, they catch the chicken bone special going north for economic opportunities. Well, things in New York and other places deteriorated. So people started catching the chicken bone special coming back home. You got a lot of people that went north, decided to come back home, and jobs opened up in the school system, AB, other things. So we find a lot of persons coming back. I don't know if I answered your question.
I didn't know, I don't know if we have, do we have time to ask more questions, or do you have to, it's 4:30.
I'm afraid I do have to leave. Maybe one more question. There's one more.
Do any of the students have a question? This is your chance. Ladies and gentlemen.
Let me mention one other thing. Jimmy never gave you everything about him. There was a teacher called Mrs. Turner.
English and French.
Right. and she was his mentor, you know, and that was a special kind of relationship. There were other people in town, like a person by the name of Mr. Arthur Caldwell. He was the first Eagle Scout that came out.
Almost. Life.
Life Scout.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
While I was a 30 Eagle. he went to the Jamboree, which was sort of unheard of. There were certain other accomplishments. When I was in the service, he was studying in Paris on some kind of fellowship, right?
Weren't you also president of the student body at North Carolina Central?
And I think you finished what? Cum laude? What was that? See, he's very, you know.
I don't even know you anymore.
So, coming out of Lincoln, I mean, we were very proud of the accomplishments that he had made. And we were very proud of accomplishments that other blacks had made. His brother, you know, was manager of Baker Shoes, you know. So, you know, we kept up with the accomplishments that persons that went north and worked their way up. So, I need to throw that in there, okay? He wasn't going to tell you that, so.
Can I squeeze a question in? You've described a certain set of characteristics to Orange County Training School / Lincoln High School, and I wonder where they came from. Did they come from the community? Did they come from the church? Did they come from the school administration? What defined the character? What gave that character to the school?
Well, I think it was a combination. I think the combination was, a part of the of that combination was the parents, the churches, the school administration. I think I'd give a great deal of credit to the school administration and to the teachers. The principal who was there when I left, Mr. McDougall, and I know that you've heard a good many things about him. I think that he was certainly one, I would say, the driving force behind that, because of the attitude that he took toward the students, and taking that attitude toward the students meant that obviously he did the same thing toward, he encouraged the teachers to convey that message to the students. And I think the churches, because the churches in, certainly in our African American community, many of the other African American communities, provide a kind of support that we simply could not find anywhere else, from a standpoint of church programs, the availability of the church facilities for things that the schools might want to do, which they can't do at the schools, the provision of, we can say, Sunday school, Bible schools, the Bible study held during the summers, which provided an outlet for the students. And I think that the parents certainly provided a great deal of support, much of it positive, some of it perhaps passive from a standpoint that they were not constantly, we would say, at the school, in the building, but the school knew that it could count on the parents for support in whatever capacity they might need the parents to provide, especially in obviously monitoring the activity, the behavior of the children, and monitoring the children as far as their preparation was concerned. So I think it was a combination of all of those things. And I think that the reinforcement for that came from the idea that education provided the greatest potential for the students to realize their potential eventually. That is, the opportunities that were open to us would be open only if we obtained an education. We stayed in school in the first place, in elementary school and high school, and if we continued as far as we could after that. And I think those were the things that were really the motivating factor. One last thing, if I may, from my, again, my personal experience. Once upon a time, I was a member of a group of American students in Paris, and I was invited to join that group because I attended the American Church in Paris. The American Church in Paris was actually non-denominational. I'm not sure it still exists in that form, but this was a number of years ago. Anyway, most of the students in that group came from what I think we have to admit at that time, and this was the early 60s, were members of an elite. Harvard, Yale, Princeton, maybe there was somebody from UNC, I'm not sure, but for a student to be spending junior year abroad in Paris, because most of these students were junior year abroad in Paris at that time, economically, not necessarily politically, but economically, an expensive proposition. So these students were in Paris, we were in Paris, about 20 or so. And the church had a regular program. Once a month, they would serve dinner for us. I can't remember whether we had to pay for it. I probably didn't have to pay for it. But they would serve dinner, and then they'd have a speaker after dinner. And the speaker would be told that he or she could present, lecture, whatever, to the group, and then the group could ask questions. One of the speakers, and this was the first time that I had personally met this speaker, was Richard Wright, writer, native son of Mississippi, in exile, more or less, in Paris. He admitted in later years he was a communist. But during his talk, Richard Wright said, one of the most pressing requirements for Western civilization at that time was to ensure that the world would never again see another Holocaust. Another Holocaust. He did not say slavery. He did not say that the Western world never again goes to Africa or any other part of the world and colonizes and makes slaves out of those people. Now, why didn't he say that? I don't know. I didn't ask him, but I think that what he had in mind was there is no turning back to slavery. The world cannot return to the kind of slavery that brought our ancestors here. I think that that's what Richard Wright had in mind. But he was still thinking that a Germany, which now is a member of the European Union, one of the leading participants in the European Union, France, Britain, Italy, etc., would never again be permitted to create a fascist regime, the kind of action that Germany had taken twice within the 20th century, the First World War and the Second World War. So I say that to express my hope, my belief, that here in the United States, we will not go back, as much as some people, I won't go any further than that. I don't think we'll go back to segregation in the form that it was practiced when we were growing up. But perhaps the only guarantee that we won't is that you take lessons from this class, from this project, which you can use for yourselves, for your children, for all of our children, so that we don't see that kind of mentality here in the United States again. It may happen in some other parts of the world, but we have taken a leadership role here in the United States sometimes, whether we wanted to or not. Why can't we do it again on this issue? Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we take just a 5-minute break and reconvene?
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. These interviews and work is just, you can feed into Bob Gilgore's program and be part of that.
Sure.
Exhibit and part of the, and they will become part of the historical record.
Sure.
They can, will you be coming to the reunion? Yes.
I'm planning to. I'm trying now to make plans for that. again, we have a couple of family issues we have to work out. I do want to.
Yeah, yeah. That should be an interesting event.